Hello and welcome to the Melissa Diaz Report. My name is Melissa Diaz, coming to you live from Austin, Texas. Hello, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in. Yeah, it's good to be here. Yeah, I do have a soundboard. I am going to use it indiscriminately. I have nothing better to do. I'm a stay-at-home mom. All right, welcome to my news show right now. What's up? We have Sam Altman's interview with Tucker Carlson, which I want to make some commentary on. We also have a new update on the Kimmel show, Jimmy Kimmel show, which is actually going to resume on Tuesday. We have Obama's commentary on the Kirk assassination, which is circulating through the socials at the moment. There is the Charlie Kirk Memorial, in which Erica Kirk notably made a big speech where she forgave the shooter to uproarious applause, and other updates about Turning Point USA, as well as a announcement that Trump's going to be making in 10 minutes, actually. Oh, no, actually, he probably made it an hour ago, Eastern time. Then there's another update about the man accused of trying to assassinate Trump in Florida and his trial, which kicked off, I think, a week or two ago and hasn't been covered as much, but is ongoing right now. And yeah, and that's it. That's what we're going to cover today. We're going to try to make it a nice, nifty, really cool, a fast-paced show. I'm going to make some magic happen, okay? We're going to make it happen today. So, what's on the agenda first? First, we're going to have the Sam Altman interview with Tucker Carlson. This interview happened a week ago, I think. It's a pretty interesting interview for many reasons that people mentioned, but also a few reasons that I observed, which I don't think were mentioned that often. Tucker Carlson is concerned with, big abstract concepts about morality and good and evil, and like what artificial intelligence and large language models are going to be incorporating in their usage, and like what do they stand for and what moral framework do they operate on. And this is Tucker Carlson's questions, and on some level, I guess, on a philosophical level, some of these were pretty good questions. Some of them were maybe too childlike in simplicity, but that's because he was just focusing on the moral framework of large language models, which is basically are they good? Is it a good language model or is it a bad language model? Basically, like, is it going to be on Santa's naughty list this year, or is it going to be on Santa's good list? Should we give the LLMs a lump of coal this year or not? What do you think, Sam? And then Sam, on the other hand, was basically, it seems like he was just being interviewed so that he could just divest the LLMs from any kind of responsibility for a moral framework altogether, because his position throughout the interview is basically, first off, that AIs, they're just tools. I think essentially is the takeaway. They are just tools. And the specifications for their usage is based on large data to inform what the average use case is going to be and what it's going to be good for. It's basically, in a sense, I guess, it's democratized in the sense that it's taking samples of people's preferences. It's taking samples of just like human behavior to inform how to move forward with the LLMs, right? So allegedly, this is what he's saying, right? And so it kind of just goes back and forth like that for the full 40 or so minutes that the interview happened. And it's basically just more of the same performative political rhetoric. That's kind of all we have now is in journalism and in politics. They took out politics and they took out investigative journalism And they took, you know, they took out concepts of diplomacy and, like, you know, let's talk about the economy and let's really consider what's happening. And they ripped that all out. Somehow this happened, I guess, because it wouldn't get funding once the internet was a thing. You couldn't make money off of that or fundraise. And then they just put in like a big show, like a big multi-ring circus, like Barnum and Bailey's used to be. Where Barnum and Bailey's circus used to be I think it was like two or three circuses that merged at some point in the 20th century. And, you know, like during the Zoot Suit era or some shit, and everyone's going, you know, dancing the Fosse, like, and then it moved into Madison Square Garden. I remember I would go as a kid and you would watch three separate circuses basically happening simultaneously. And I think this is what we're experiencing in United States politics and media. It's just everything has become some kind of American style show. Like if it's not a soap opera, it's a wrestling match. If it's not a wrestling match, it's a musical. If it's not a musical, I don't know. Is that all we have as Americans? I think that's kind of it. You know, it's like a Hollywood blockbuster. Which, is that the soap opera? I don't think they're quite the same. But it's, okay, fine. We got soap operas, wrestling matches, musicals, and Hollywood blockbusters. That's all we got. That's what we have. I don't know if I would consolidate the soap operas and the Hollywood thing, but they're kind of different, so I don't want to. Ugh, making decisions like this is so hard. Okay, what are you going to do, right? Anyway, I mean, either way, you know these guys are making some serious money, 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 money. And Sam Altman and Tucker Carlson, I mean, like, what are they really, right? They're characters. They're characters that are playing a role as they are like the proto-digital avatar. We're still using real people. I feel like eventually we're going to use literal AI avatars for this kind of shit to just be brand ambassadors for various institutions and groups and interest groups and all that shit. But now, for now, we're still using people because humans are not comfortable with the idea of just having feelings, negative or positive, towards some kind of digital persona that's completely fake. So what are you going to do, right? So we got Sam Altman, who's, and you, it's in a way, it's kind of like Tucker Carlson at some point asks him, okay, who is responsible for building these LLMs, right? Like, who name them? And then Sam Altman kind of says something like, well, you know, we can't name the bureau that's in charge or the department that's in charge of making the you know, moral framework decisions, right? Because of doxing or whatever. He says, like, we can't dox them. That's what it's called now, to just mention someone, some working professional's name, because now it's like dangerous to do it. Before, we didn't have the resources to, you know, call a SWAT team on somebody's house like we do now, I guess. Couldn't people do that before? I don't know. Well, you couldn't find somebody's address that easily. Although we did have the yellow pages, so there, I don't know. I guess you could just do prank phone calls, but that was the extent of it. So Sam Altman essentially answers Tucker Carlson's question by saying, it's me. I'm the one responsible for the LLM, the moral framework, all of the decisions about ethics and morality is me. And in a way, that's kind of revealing what he's really there for. Because you can't really, if you dive into it even a little bit, you can't seriously believe that Sam Altman is solely responsible, you know, for any fallout from this LLM that he's working on, right? You can't really, I mean, a whole, like, teams and teams of people work on this across the globe. And everyone is fiddling and making decisions in various departments. And then there's a department that's specifically for the ethics, but they need a scapegoat. And Sam Altman, I guess, is the guy. He steps up as the scapegoat because he's incurring the most risk for the highest reward, right? He's going to make the most money because he's the scapegoat if it all goes wrong. But then if it doesn't go wrong, if it actually goes so right, and now we're living in Shangri-La and everyone lives forever and cancer's cured forever and everything, you know, and you know, we just make designer babies. We make babies shaped like pugs. We make we start churning out babies to look the same as our dogs, basically, right? We'll have like a husky baby, we'll have maybe like a half baby, half dog hybrid. Right? We won't ever take procreation seriously again, because that will be outsourced to some company who will make the babies and replenish society for us. In the meantime, we get to just have fun with our uteruses and just give birth to ridiculous things, right? Like llamas with flippers, if we want. You know what I mean? So I don't know, right? If everything goes amazingly right. And then if it doesn't, he takes the fall. And this is the situation. So I think that's essentially what all media personalities are now. They, through rhetoric, come to symbolize a certain demographic here, a certain mode of thinking or ideology or belief system or institution or whatever. If you can't shut the fuck up, put a camera on you, and eventually you will find a group that wants you to represent what they're all about, because you're saying everything they agree with, and then you can make the big bucks. But the thing is that if what you're saying actually makes people angry, you can be shot in the neck, like Charlie Kirk, or like the United Healthcare guy. You can be, you know, hunted down and gotten rid of as a symbol, right? As an example for the others. And I don't know, maybe that's just how rich people hide now, right? They hide through deflection. They make a media person their stand-in while they all go live in their private islands, and they don't even have contact with us. They probably either live in private islands, they're all in Dubai, where none of us are, just them and slaves, and then they fly over people's heads in New York City in like invisible fucking drones or something. I don't know. And in the meantime, these influencers, so-called, right, just kind of prance around and pretend to be those people for them. They go out and they spread the propaganda for them, right? They engage in the marketplace of ideas, but they're like a buffer for the violence that's clearly growing in this country. And that's essentially what happened in this interview. Is you kind of see that's what Sam Altman is, right? He represents Silicon Valley like that, and other guys that get as big as him, and maybe there are CEOs, and it's just like a PR facing CEO kind of deal. CEOs are just managers for rich people's assets anyway. So I don't know. It was very interesting, because it's just postmodern television. That's what this is. This shit, Sam Altman is a character. And I'm not saying that because he comes across as like a robot, and like you doubt that he even has humanity, because he pauses sometimes in ways that don't feel like a pregnant pause so much, like he's thinking so much, as they feel like his software is buffering and you're waiting for the window to refresh for him to continue the sentence, you know? It's not just that. It's not that he just acts like a sim character. It's that he actually is a character. He's a character in a drama that's playing out immersively rather than on TV, because people are bored with TV. We don't give a shit about shows. We don't believe in even suspending disbelief anymore. We don't believe in suspending disbelief to look into a box. So that box has moved to be all around us. Now we are in the tube. We're in YouTube, where a lot of us are making content for YouTube. We're in the TV now, right? Now it's immersive. That's why all the museums are immersive. Everything's about being immersed now. We want to be immersed, because it's not good enough to look at the TV. We want to be in the TV. And so now you get to go and listen to podcasts and hear characters, like fictional characters, talk and develop a plot, allegedly some kind of plot that's happening supposedly in the real world through this exchange, supposed exchange of ideas. Meanwhile, you never get the sense that either one of them are actually talking to each other. It's more like they're talking past each other and dog whistling to the demographic that they know is actually listening to them. And so you get to this kind of, in a way, even though you're watching them and passively taking in what they're saying and processing it, right, and either being convinced or not, but at the same time, you're also still the main character. And that's how they've allowed postmodern entertainment to flourish, is by finding the most narcissistic way for the viewer to watch TV, basically. Because you will always feel like the main character, and like you're pondering all these ideas, but meanwhile, you're not pondering shit. You're being led by the hand through like just a bunch of bullshit, right? You're being walked through ideas and being told that that's what thinking feels like. You know what I mean? And they talk and they talk, and you go, ah, and then you think you thought that, and you did not. And that's the internet, and that's podcasting, and that's all of everything, and that is entertainment now. You are in the TV. That's why TV sucks now, right? Because haven't you ever noticed that in old shows, when they do fake TV shows in the shows, right? Like when the main character's watching TV, the TV show sucks and is bland and kind of uninteresting, because they don't want that fake TV show to take away from the real show that you're watching, right? So it's supposed to be just kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, look at this TV show on this TV show. And that's why our real TV now is that, because it's not meant to distract you from your main character syndrome lifestyle, your self-centered fucking narcissistic lifestyle, where you listen to words get shoved into your brain all day long, and then eventually you start to think that those are thoughts that you came up with and that you're brilliant. But really, it's propagandists using, you know, influencers as, you know, like brand ambassadors to their propaganda, so that you buy in to what they want. And that is some 4D chess kind of shit. That's pretty impressive, and I'm not even sure we're all caught up on how that works. I think it's still going to be some years before we realize that. I think I'm just saying something that I don't even know that I'm describing well, but I'm seeing it, you know, and I'm gonna just talk about it because I see it and I think it's so interesting. You know, everything we interact with, all of the media we interact with is a face. It's faces after faces after faces. That's how they grab your attention. I don't know if you've noticed that, for the most part, is a face. The first thing you see when you see a news feed in any platform, a face immediately, or tits, you know, if you're a guy, I guess, or gay or something. It's a face, somebody's face, or something strange, right? Maybe like a face that doesn't look right, or and so it pulls you in. And each one of those faces, it's just different faces that that the same entity is displaying to you. It's just switching faces, but it's one entity that's doing this. It's like a creepy, like chimera, basically. That's trying to constantly draw you in, and we are falling for it because that's our weak spot. That's our blind spot for our, you know, monkey brains somehow, is this kind of paradigm that we're stuck in right now. And so I don't know what I want to do with that idea. I just know that I see it. Something about it feels, I don't know, like a Greek tragedy just waiting to happen. I'm not even going to explain that. I'm just going to let that hang out there. I'm going to move on to the next story. But anyway, that was the Sam Altman and Tucker Carlson interview. Anyway, moving on to the next topic. We got the Kimmel Show, which is just going to resume on Tuesday. And this is another thing that's just, it's like, was it even ever going to really be off the air, ever? Was it just performance? Was it a performative ploy to get people to tune in because of controversy? Is that too far-fetched to even say? Because, I mean, hasn't that been the model now for all influencers and media corporations that are trying to get and keep your attention? Is that once they start to get irrelevant, which the Kimmel Show had been, it was getting kind of bland and kind of irrelevant, a little vanilla, right? What's missing? You got to spice it up. You got to make it a little controversial. And then so they have him make this kind of like, I don't even know what that was. Was that a joke, right? But it wasn't funny, and it wasn't particularly offensive, and it didn't even actually go after specifically Charlie Kirk. It was really like the MAGA crowd, right? But just enough to be able to act like it's controversial. It's kind of like when Snoop Dogg said that he wouldn't take his kid to watch, like a gay couple in a Pixar movie or some shit, and then he just apologized. I mean, I really do think that this is bullshit. I really, really think that this is just the new PR. This is just how people get your attention now. It's just playing on your outrage buttons, and eventually that little clitoris is going to go numb from so much stimulation, and then we won't even feel outraged anymore. And then they're like slowly overstimulating us to the point where, like, are we ever going to be able to feel anything again? I mean, can I just like, you know, it's like if I woke up every fucking day and the minute I woke up, somebody was rubbing my nipples. Listen, okay, look, I had to, when I was in labor, I had to rub my nipples. That's what they said. Rub your nipples. It stimulates the cramps, basically. What are they called? Contractions, right? Rub your nipples nonstop, and it will stimulate contractions. Now, you rub your nipples, that's supposed to feel good. But let me tell you something. When you rub your nipples for 3 hours straight, it starts to feel not so good. It starts to feel like the world doesn't even make sense anymore. It starts to feel like you wonder if you'll ever feel good ever again. And I think that's the real threat with this entertainment ecosystem is that they're constantly rubbing your soft spaces. Constantly. It's like never ending. And then it's just, eventually, it's like you're never going to be able to really feel it in that subtle way again, right? You're just going to, it's kind of like, you know what it's like? It's like when you start watching porn online, which I don't even know because this is a confession. This makes me, I feel less human in your eyes. I'm sorry, but I don't watch porn, never really have. Tried it, non-judgmental about it. It's cool if you like it. I don't watch it. I can't. Because it's like, I like being sensitive. It's the reason why I don't eat high sugar stuff. I don't want to desensitize my mouth to like real subtle tastes and sensory experiences. Because once you blast your mouth with, you know, like gas station candy and just all of the treats that you can find at a supermarket, like all, I don't even know the names because I never even look in that direction. Because it's just like, I know what I want so much that I just don't even look because I don't care. I know what I want. And I want to have like that fringe taste experience. I want to be able to, you know, like eat some weird shit like a fucking rose petal on an acorn wrapped in cheese or some shit like, and somebody go, hey, you see the notes of like boogers and bill, right? And you feel the grass, little notes of grass, you know, like I want to be able to like chew on the thing and go, yeah, I do actually. And you can't do that if the thing you do when you go to the supermarket is buy like 5 cheesecakes and then just inhale them when you get home. People talk about, oh, like, you know, like eating junk food and stuff for the, you know, the reasons for diabetes and being overweight and stuff. But for me, it's like, I don't think people should eat that because there's such a complexity of experience in life that why would you want to limit it by deadening your senses to the point where the only thing that works is like more and more extreme shit. back to the porn, like you see where this is going. So you watch porn, then you start watching hardcore porn and harder porn. You know, it starts with you watching, you know, like two guys make out or some shit like that. And then it ends with you watching like somebody get tortured and choked and spit on and like squeezed. And then you're squeezing your body parts to the point where they're about to pop because you watched, like you did too much. Right. And then it gets to the point where like when you want just like a regular girlfriend or boyfriend, just a regular, normal, wholesome person, you won't know what to do with them. They won't be able to make you feel anything because for them, it doesn't take as much. Their tolerance is so much lower. So I don't know, man, this outrage machine, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want to feel outraged about the small things. That's what I'm saying. I want to feel. When was the last time you felt peeved? That word just flew right out of the American lexicon because the outrage machine is ramping up and the tolerance level for outrage is getting so high that now it's like when you watch politics, it's not interesting unless there's a government shutdown looming, right? Or some shit like that, or some fucking genocide or something. Like they always have to paint it like that. And when it comes to, you know, celebrities, unless you know that they're racist or a rapist or a thing, right? Even if they're not, but then you want to see them like grovel and apologize and grow, like you want to like get this outrage and then this gratification after that, that they're bending the knee to you somehow. And that gets ramped up more and more to the point where like you can't even feel peeved about just like, you know, like a thing, like another, like a more subtle thing, like, you know, like you can't really be attuned to the feeling of being alone at night, calling an Uber in a strange city and just watching that little illustration of a car on your phone follow the line to get to you and feel like that subtle like drop in the pit of your stomach, right? You can't even really pay attention to that because it's so nuanced and subtle, you know? And where you kind of, for a moment, you're like, is that car ever going to get to me? Like, what if something happens before it gets here or something? You know what I mean? Like something, I don't know, like little subtle feelings, subtle fears and rages and peevishness, you know, like you're blowing out the gamut of human emotions just so that you can feel big outrage. And it's not us doing, I'm just saying like they're attempting to do that with entertainment. It fucking sucks. This Kimmel thing, it's like, I feel like it was never even a threat to begin with. I feel like the whole thing was a fucking bait and switch. I feel like it was smoke and mirrors at this point. I feel lied to. I feel like this was built bullshit. This was a PR stunt. That's what I feel. You know? And then talk about it. Look, if you want to talk about an avatar, right? Obama, right? This is the next thing. Let's move on. Let's go to the next story. Right? Obama now goes and he does a comment on the Charlie Kirk assassination. And it's like, this is exactly why the Democratic Party is accused to be out of touch with, you know, the, you know, center of America or whoever you're trying to point to. I don't know, right? But he just goes and he says a thing. And essentially it's like, you know, oh, you know, it's just that boys, they saw themselves not being, you know, included anymore. And so, you know, this is what and it's like, and then they get extreme and they're, and he's saying this shit. He's sitting in a chair and trying to look like regal. But the thing is that the minute he started stumping for Kamala, it's like the spell of his charisma was lifted in my eyes. And I was just like, oh, he's just another fucking politician. He's just smoother and more adept at navigating, you know, people's defenses than others, which is a great skill to have as a politician. And he's good at seeming authentic, but ultimately, like all of the rest, he's not. He's just another politician. He has a job. This is the job, right? And the job is to always speak the party line. And so it seems out of touch what he was saying, but it was, the fact is that it's very much in touch with the white collar liberal arts college educated crowd who listens to him say that, and they are like validated in their prejudice about like what's been going down for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years, where they nod along and they go, yeah, you know, these young men, they feel like out, they feel left behind. And then that's why fascism takes hold. And it's just, that's what your takeaway is. You know, you're going to stick with that. It's just so tone deaf. And the thing is, it's like they make these statements about like young men and this and that, and it's supposed to be innocuous, but it's so infuriating because you know that it's, you know what they're dog whistling. And so you know that it's bullshit and that they're not actually addressing what the real anger was that led to Trump's election. And so you're just left with this thing where it's like, it's almost insulting because they're trying to speak in subtext covertly to their base. But everyone sees the suspect, the subtext, like it's out there. You're not hiding it. It's like that movie They Live at the end, where everybody can see the aliens, but then the aliens just kind of keep performing. And then it just seems grotesque. And that's kind of what's happening right now. I don't know. It's like, we see you, your pants are down. Why don't you pull them up and actually admit that they were down in the first place? I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to Erica Kirk. So there was a Charlie Kirk memorial, and Erica Kirk did a whole, you know, I forgive him. There was 90,000 people in attendance for conservative activist Charlie Kirk. And the service included speeches by President Trump, J.D. Vance, other top Trump administration officials. Kirk's wife, Erica, also spoke and said that she forgave her husband's killer. And that was kind of the high point of the night. That's the thing that all the news outlets are talking about and wowing over. Thousands of people attended the memorial service. It was in Glendale, Arizona on Sunday. Kirk's organization received over 62,000 requests from students nationwide to start chapters since his death. So good job, person trying to stop Charlie Kirk and everything he stands for. You just helped everything he stands for. Good job. So, yeah, Kirk's organization, his wife, Erica, is the new CEO. And, yeah, conservative leaders praised his 2024 election work and Christian faith. Officials vowed to continue campus events despite the assassination, saying no assassin will stop us. And that's the thing. It's because now you just made these fucking people fucking more obnoxious. Now they're going to be like, they're going to be so annoying now, so much more annoying. I don't know why people think political violence is, it doesn't even achieve what you want it to. That's the thing. It doesn't even achieve it. Maybe sometimes it can, but most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, cannot. Then there's like, I don't know, a percentage point where maybe, you know, it could be good. I don't know. I don't even know what the scenario would be, though. But it wasn't this one. I don't know that Turning Point USA is really going to outlast Charlie Kirk, though, because he was so clearly the figurehead for that thing. You know, the fundraiser, he was the primary. I mean, he founded it. It was his baby. So I don't know. I don't see it lasting very long, but I see other organizations like it. And then other influencers too, jumping in to take his place, like little understudies just fucking waiting in the wings. You cannot, every single institution in this country, especially the bigger ones, they're like hydras. Every single one is a hydra. If you kill one head, two more will take its place. So this is such a waste of energy to even try to just like, what are you gonna like pop? How many people are you gonna kill? Like, how, you really think that's going to turn everything around for whatever the progressive left or whoever the fuck this is supposed to be for? And I'm not saying the shooter was that. I'm just saying, like, the people who are jumping to, I don't know, criticize Charlie Kirk as a racist or something. It's like, this is the hill you're going to fucking, really? I don't know. Good luck. That's my sound for the Charlie Kirk assassins, success in stopping fascism. So anyway, right, you got Erica Kirk doing this forgiving the shooter speech. It was, listen, let me tell you something. Spanish soap operas have better actresses than this chick with this. It was so it came across as so fake. I mean, this was not this. I don't know. Like, this is not what I would in my head expect someone to look like at this state of distress, you know, where you're battling your inner demons to forgive somebody. And it was like such a well performed act, like of soap opera, that I think I threw up in my mouth a little bit. Okay. Her mascara didn't even run. She was trying to like act like she was patting away tears. There were no tears. There was one tear. And I think that tear came because she was just really impressed by her performance. And then that was it. And then everybody stood up to give her a standing ovation. And I saw people mouthing like, wow, you know, in the crowd. And it's like, they bought it. Or did they? I can't tell. I can't tell if we're all acting or not. In that kind of particular sphere, that's my limit. That's where I kind of go like, are we acting here? Or is this like for real? Like, why does it feel like something's not real though? It's like, is that your shadow self? Am I detecting shadow self in this posse right now, in this memorial service, where everyone is like just in denial of the fact that they know that really they just want to ramp up the tribalism, but they're just acting like, you know, this is not about that. And it's about, you know, we forgive him. Honestly, what I think this is about, this is what I think. This is Erica Kirk. You know, she's like running Turning Point USA. They need the money. They need the funding. They don't have Charlie anymore. Charlie. Charlie's gone. So the problem is that when he died, she made that other speech, I remember, where it was more like a fucking Valkyrie over here, a fucking vengeful fury going, you haven't seen the last of us. You don't know what you have awakened. It was like a completely different speech, right? She was like a Greek, she's like an ancient Greek queen, just like swearing revenge or something. She was like, I will get my revenge. And it was just such a bad look for her as a Christian that her PR people were like, look, Erica, you fucked up, okay? This is not good for the brand. You're supposed to be like a meek Christian wife, and you just kind of revealed yourself for the fucking banshee that you really are, which is fine. Personally, I think I love strong women, and I saw her for who she really was, and it's like very impressive. I mean, this fucking hawk-eyed, you know, her fucking hands were curled into talons, right? Her fucking hair was just writhing around her face. That was the real Erica Kirk. And I was like, damn, bitch. Damn, that was impressive, right? That she is a mega bitch. And I think you should be allowed to be a mega bitch, but in society, you're not, right? You got to tone it down. And it's not necessarily in society, but it's hard for a mega bitch. There's no institutions for mega bitches in this country unless you play one on TV. Then you can really lean in and be a mega bitch. People love that for some kind of soap opera or something like that. People love mega bitches, but only in fantasy. In real life, the mega bitches like the Hillary Clintons and the Kamala Harrises and the Erica Kirks, the problem is like the only way to get power is to go through institutions where you're expected to cool it somehow. Like Hillary Clinton, right? She went up through the State Department, right? State Department, it's all about diplomacy. You gotta be chill. You gotta be more like an Obama, but she's not that, right? So her whole career, she's been having to rein it in and you know, media facing, just be super bland, right? And like chill. I'm like, hey, I'm fucking cool. And it's like, but you could see her like, her face is cracking like a vase, and beneath it you could see like the real her just raging, wishing she could just be herself. And Kamala Harris is the same, mega bitch. And Erica Kirk, mega bitch. And for her it's probably harder actually, because at least Kamala Harris, go, you know, the Justice Department, you can be a mega bitch actually. That's kind of the few places, but it's a kind of a mega bitch. Erica Kirk has to be like, she has to hide being a mega bitch around a bunch of, you know, American Protestant Christians. I mean, that is difficult because they like to pretend that their women are meek and mild and sugar and spice and everything nice. You know what I mean? And it's I mean, it's a prison of her own making, right? She knows what she's doing. She's an adult, and so I don't feel bad for her. But I do see that when she made that revenge speech, that was her. That was the real fucking Erica Kirk. And I think her PR people were like, that's a really bad look, and you're risking our funding for Turning Point USA. You are the new CEO. You're going to have to fucking fix it. Fix it, Erica Kirk. Fix it. And so there was a memorial service for Charlie Kirk. Thousands were going to be there. A lot of media attention. What better place to turn it all around than right there in a church, in a big mega church? You go and you pretend that you have forgiven this person. In reality, I don't think she's forgiven shit. I do think she probably genuinely loved the shit out of this guy, clearly. I really do think that, because I've seen some clips of her talking to him on a podcast. That shit wasn't fake. She loves that guy homicidally, which is, I think, how a mega bitch loves somebody. And it's very, and you know, you should be flattered if a mega bitch loves you to that extent. You know what I mean? Because that means they will kill for you. And she's that kind of bitch. But she's going to have to tone it down and pretend to be a good little girl. I think behind the scenes, though, I think she's going to make sure that that fucking kid goes away for a very, very long time. Maybe even gets killed. I think she's going to maybe pretend that she doesn't want it, but she's definitely going to try to make sure that that kid gets the death penalty or some shit like that. I really think that. Anyway, but, you know, Turning Point USA can continue to receive their funding now that Erica Kirk forgave the shooter publicly. All right, let's move on. Let's go to another final topic. We don't have time to cover the man accused of trying to assassinate Trump in Florida. We'll cover that on Thursday. Well, actually, you know what? Let's stop it here because we've been going for 40 minutes. And, you know, I don't want to be a blowhard or anything. But these were the main stories that I wanted to cover anyway. Tune in Thursday. We're going to talk about Trump's declaration about Tylenol as the cause of autism. We're going to have another update about the man accused of trying to assassinate Trump in his trial in Florida. And anything else notable that I find in the next 2 days. In the meantime, thanks for tuning in to the Melissa Diaz Report. My name was Melissa Diaz. This was the Melissa Diaz Report. Thank you for tuning in and listening to the show and me rant. I really appreciate it. You guys were fantastic. You didn't even talk once. That's amazing. You're so much self-control. Anyway, I got to go take a nap because I haven't slept more than 2 hours in the last week. So you guys have been amazing, amazing, amazing. Thanks again. I'll talk to you again on Thursday. I'll check in, and I hope you have a good couple days, and I'll see you again soon. All right. Bye.